Isn't that Amelia's weekly fish fry? Why, it is! Hi there! Welcome to another episode of EE Journal's long-standing podcast with my name in the title. Hey, yes, I'm Amelia Dalton, and this week we're tackling the age-old question, what are we going to do with all these cores? Sure, we all want to harness the extreme performance power of heterogeneous multi-core computing, but how do we get there? Well, let me bring in Celestica CEO Maximilian Odendahl to help us plot a course. Yes, Max and I are chatting about all of this and more. Oh yeah, and a little basketball too. Check it out. Hi, Max. Thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me.
So you're here to talk about multi-core software development. So Max, what do you think are the biggest challenges in this space today?
So the key problem these days is there's not any kind of tooling, and that's obviously what we would like to change. So the key problem here is that it's a very manual process. You have to understand the properties of your hardware, you have to understand the properties of your software, and then how to map your software to your hardware is a very big problem, and everything these days is manual, taking huge amount of resources. So it takes an expert, and it takes a lot of experts, right? And that's really a big problem across different industries.
So there's been a big movement toward heterogeneous computing to push the performance envelope, but what about software development for heterogeneous computing systems? It seems like we haven't quite tackled that problem yet.
Absolutely, and that makes this problem I just described, you know, what part of your software to run on which core makes it even more difficult, right? So that, you know, manual process was already difficult if you talk about homogeneous cores. So now add different types of cores to that problem, even different types of communication possibilities, right? Different memory sizes, maybe even different operating systems running on those different cores. So you already hear from that list, it's a huge problem, and there's just no way in the future to do this manually by expert know-how.
So you guys just released the XLX tool suite. Tell my audience more about that.
So the XLX tool suite, you know, we started with this basically 10 years ago already. We have a bunch of different guys who understand a lot about hardware, but they also understand a lot of software, right? So we originally started from compiler technology. So we can use that compiler technology to actually analyze your software, and then we add a good understanding of your target architecture, and that's how we're able to map your software and bring it to a multi-core device. And I think a cool fact about our technology is that this works through the level of abstraction we chose. It works for both commercial off-the-shelf multi-core devices, but it also works for your in-house architectures without you needing to do any kind of tooling yourself, no compilers or no simulators necessary yourself. You know, you get that from us. So we believe this is a key productivity improvement which is urgently needed.
As a follow-up question, Max, what is the SLX parallelizer all about?
So the parallelizer is basically an enabler for our customers to help them bring their existing legacy code, so it's sequential C or C++ code, into the multi-core world. So I talked a lot about mapping software to different cores. Well, if you don't have any kind of parallelism, there's nothing to map, right? So the first part here is you have to take your, if you do have sequential code, you have to identify this parallelism. You need to analyze hotspots of your application, overlay this with parallelism identification, and then give you some insights on how that software would perform on a given multi-core device. We can do all of that fully automatic. Compare that to a manual effort where you basically go through every line of trying to understand what is your software doing and where do you find parallelism. Let's take some automotive software as an example. We're talking about millions of lines. You know, that's going to be pretty difficult doing it manually. So we believe this is not only a productivity increase, but it also helps you with early risk analysis. You know, if I spend time here, what do I get out of it at the end of the day?
All right, cool. So, Max, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I know you're a huge basketball fan and may even be as big of a basketball fan as I am, which is saying something for this show. But we all know that Michael Jordan is the best basketball player of all time. All right. Who is the second best basketball player of all time, in your opinion?
Ooh, tough one. I thought I can just confirm that, yes, Michael Jordan is the best player, so that would have been an easy one. Well, me being German, I guess I have to go with Dirk Nowitzki, and that's going to be a tough call, but, you know, maybe that's more home country pride than actually being serious, but it's, I think his ride has been pretty amazing, so I'll just go for him, even though it might not actually be true.
That's a good choice. I don't know if I'd put him second, probably in the top five somewhere. He's a really good guy, has had a really long career, and yeah. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Max.
Thanks so much for having me. Thanks a lot.
Keeping with our embedded system design theme this week, my next guest is Roger Hosking from Pentek. What have standards done for you lately? Actually, probably quite a lot. Roger and I are diving feet first into the world of embedded system design standards and tools. So let's go. Thank you so much for joining me, Roger.
My pleasure.
Excellent. So for my audience who may not know, give me a quick recap. What is Pentek all about?
What we do, we've been in business for 30 years now, and what we do is we take the latest technology components for data conversion, like A to D converters, D to A converters, and tie them directly to signal processing elements, which first were DSP chips, and then power PCs, and now it's almost all FPGAs for the last 10 years or so. And so we allow our customers to get a board that contains those components connected by us, interfaced in the FPGA so that they can do some of the signal processing tasks that they need to do inside of the FPGA. We provide a lot of those basic functions already installed, like digital down converters and so forth, and DMA engines and memory interfaces. But with the extra resources available in the FPGA, our customers can have the room to add their own IP blocks, their own modules inside. With some of the new tools that are out there, it's become very easy for them to be able to do so. So we're trying to get our customers able to take advantage of the latest technology devices in open architecture board level products so they can put them into their systems to deliver a radar system or a communication system to their end customer. So we don't build systems. We build board-level products, and so our customers are all prime contractors. 95% of our business is to Mil-Aero.
So let's talk about embedded system design, where tools and standards seem to be changing as quick as you can talk about them. Let's talk about tools first. What does the tool landscape look like right now, and what kind of tools do you think we need to boost our performance in our designs?
Well, we've done quite a bit of thermal analysis, and we've got some really nice thermal analysis tools that have allowed us to manage the thermal issues that these high-density FPGA components impose. I mean, like you can have, you know, 20, 30 watts per device, which needs to then be dissipated through either air or conduction cooling technologies. But often when you look at a particular design and you think you've done a good job, you really don't know until you see the temperature going too high and you say, well, what did I do wrong? So you need those thermal modeling tools in order to go in and change the design intelligently and then model that change and get that right, and then you can go build it and it will be much better. The other thing in terms of FPGA design is we're using new block diagram oriented FPGA design tools, specifically the Xilinx Vivado IP integrator. Which allows our customers to take all of the blocks that we provide, all of the standard blocks that come with the Xilinx library, and change the organization of those blocks to do something custom or add their own blocks into that mix of modules that's there. And IP Integrator lets you do that very easily with a graphical tool. To make a connection, you click on one block and click on the other, and you've drawn a link from one to the other. And as far as standards go, the ACSI-4 standard is a method now that's been adopted from ARM that defines how these modules, these IP blocks, can be interfaced from one to the other. And so the Vivado IP Integrator tool uses the ACSI-4 blocks as its method of knowing how to connect from one to the other. And so all of our modules are ACSI-4. All of Xilinx's are ACSI-4 compliant. When a customer creates his own custom block, he should do it the same way so that everything plays together. And the nice thing about that is not only does it cut design time by as much as 4 times over doing hand coding, you know, lines of VHDL code, can make it much faster, but it also improves the portability. So you can take a design you have today and move it over to another project quite easily because of these high-level blocks that are so easy to design with.
Excellent. Well, I think it's time for my off-the-cuff question already, okay. Roger. So I know you enjoy a bit of rollerblading. How the heck did you get involved with that?
Well, I was running for 20, 25 years, and I started to feel some little twinges in my joints. And I said, maybe it's a little bit too much impact, you know, every day or every other day. So I said, let me try rollerblading because it looked like a lot of fun. It's scary. It's sort of like your first ski trip down the slope where you're out of control.
Right.
You worry about it. The first thing you need to learn is how to stop.
Okay, right. Makes sense.
And that, I guess it's the same with skiing, too. So, but I've only fallen about 3 times.
That's
okay.
Good. Yeah.
When you fall, you get hurt. But I never got hurt very bad. I never got hurt bad enough to stop it.
That's
so
excellent.
I do enjoy it.
Do you rollerblade every day?
No,
every other
I don't.
Day?
No? It's in the winter, it's a lot less.
Sure.
But I'm usually there 3-4 times a week.
Nice.
And it's a 3-mile trip around the lake that I go. So it's a nice trip.
Excellent. Well, I think that's all I have time for today.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Roger.
All right, Amelia, my pleasure.
So many of our embedded applications today require digital isolation to protect them and, well, their users from real-world hazards like voltage spikes or incompatible voltages. But have you tried selecting the right digital isolation solution lately? Yeah, it can be not easy, to put it lightly. If this sounds like a challenge you've had or will have in the future, I would recommend checking out EE Journal's most recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled How to Select the Right Digital Isolator. In this episode of Chalk Talk, I sit down with Tony Parto of Maxim Integrated, and we chat about how to select the right type of isolator for your next application. You can watch this episode of Chalk Talk by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, by checking out our on-demand section on EE Journal, or even head on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, then you can follow us on LinkedIn. We also have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EE Journal. It is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can also grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of February 10th, 2017, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been Fry.